22. Vocabulary. Monetary. Steer. Break. Precise. Variable. Lag. Tense. Analogy.
Blacken.
Rear. Faulty. Boast. Fall. Flight. Predict.
Percentage.
Whole. Favorable. Inflation. Productive. Slack. Estimate. Mild. Thrill. Lichen.
Passage. Much of the language used to describe monetary policy, such as steering the economy to a soft landing or a touch on the brakes, makes it sound like a precise science. Nothing could be further from the truth. The link between interest rates and inflation is uncertain, and there are long variable lags before policy changes have any effect on the economy. Hence the analogy that likens the conduct of monetary policy to driving a car with a blackened windscreen, a cracked rearview mirror, and a faulty steering wheel. Given all these disadvantages, central bankers seem to have had much to boast about of late. Average inflation in the big seven industrial economies fell to a mere 2.3% last year, close to its lowest level in 30 years, before rising slightly to 2.5% this July. This is a long way below the double-digit rates which many countries experienced in the 1970s and early 1980s. It is also less than most forecasters had predicted. In late 1994, the panel of economists, which The Economist polls each month, said that America's inflation rate would average 3.5%. In 1995, in fact, it fell to 2.6% in August and is expected to average only about 3% for the year as a whole. In Britain and Japan, inflation is running half a percentage point below the rate predicted at the end of last year. This is no flash in the pan. Over the past couple of years, inflation has been consistently lower than expected in Britain and America. Economists have been particularly surprised by favorable inflation figures in Britain and the United States, since conventional measures suggest that both economies, and especially America's, have little productive slack. America's capacity utilization, for example, hit historically high levels earlier this year, and its jobless rate, 5.6% in August, has fallen below most estimates of the natural rate of employment, the rate below which inflation has taken off in the past. Why has inflation proved so mild? The most thrilling explanation is, unfortunately, a little defective. Some economists argue that powerful structural changes in the world have upended the old economic models that were based upon the historical link between growth and inflation.
Exchange.
Absurd. Incense. Consent. Extreme. Outset. Consideration. Extend. Displace. Torture.
Morally.
Shallow. Reject. Crawl. Sympathy. Capacity. Engage. Instinct.
Extremist.
Passage.
Do animals have rights? This is how the question is usually put. It sounds like a useful ground-clearing way to start. Actually, it isn't, because it assumes that there is an agreed account of human rights, which is something the world does not have. On one view of rights, to be sure, it necessarily follows that animals have none. Some philosophers argue that rights exist only within a social contract, as part of an exchange of duties and entitlements. Therefore, animals cannot have rights. The idea of punishing a tiger that kills somebody is absurd, for exactly the same reason. So is the idea that tigers have rights. However, this is only one account, and by no means an uncontested one. It denies rights not only to animals, but also to some people. For instance, to infants, the mentally incapable, and future generations. In addition, it is unclear what force a contract can have for people who never consented to it. How do you reply to somebody who says, "I don't like this contract"? The point is this: without agreement on the rights of people, arguing about the rights of animals is fruitless. It leads the discussion to extremes at the outset. It invites you to think that animals should be treated either with the consideration humans extend to others, or with no consideration at all. This is a false choice. Better to start with another, more fundamental question. Is the way we treat animals a moral issue at all? Many deny it, arguing from the view that humans are different from animals in every relevant respect. Extremists of this kind think that animals lie outside the area of moral choice. Any regard for the suffering of animals is seen as a mistake, a sentimental displacement of feeling that should properly be directed to other humans. This view, which holds that torturing a monkey is morally equivalent to chopping wood, may seem bravely logical. In fact, it is simply shallow. The confused center is right to reject it. The most elementary form of moral reasoning, the ethical equivalent of learning to crawl, is to weigh others' interest against one's own. This, in turn, requires sympathy and imagination, without which there is no capacity for moral thought. To see an animal in pain is enough for most to engage sympathy. When that happens, it is not a mistake. It is mankind's instinct for moral reasoning in action on instinct that should be encouraged rather than laughed at. Lesson 23. Vocabulary. Vitamin. Compound. Amount. Maintenance. Construct. Transform. Deficiency. Element. Carbon. Hydrogen. Oxygen. Nitrogen. Arrange. Specific. Function. Nutrition.
Extra.
Passage. Vitamins are organic compounds necessary in small amounts in the diet for the normal growth and maintenance of life of animals, including man. They do not provide energy, nor do they construct or build any part of the body. They are needed for transforming foods into energy and body maintenance. There are 13 or more of them, and if any is missing, a deficiency disease becomes apparent. Vitamins are similar because they are made of the same elements, usually carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and sometimes nitrogen. They are different in that their elements are arranged differently, and each vitamin performs one or more specific functions in the body. Getting enough vitamins is essential to life, although the body has no nutritional use for excess vitamins. Many people, nevertheless, believe in being on the safe side and thus take extra vitamins. However, a well-balanced diet will usually meet all the body's vitamin needs. Vocabulary. Routine.
Serve.
Likewise. Brief. Account. Sketch. Reference. Application. Blank. Interview. Employer. Display.
short-lived elders used to say, it's not what you want in this world, but what you get. Psychology teaches that you do get what you want if you know what you want and want the right things. You can make a mental blueprint of a desire as you would make a blueprint of a house, and each of us is continually making these blueprints in the general routine of everyday living. If we intend to have friends to dinner, we plan the menu, make a shopping list, decide which food to cook first, and such planning is an essential for any type of meal to be served. Likewise, if you want to find a job, take a sheet of paper and write a brief account of yourself. In making a blueprint for a job, begin with yourself, for when you know exactly what you have to offer, you can intelligently plan where to sell your services. This account of yourself is actually a sketch of your working life and should include education, experience, and references. Such an account is valuable. It can be referred to in filling out standard application blanks and is extremely helpful in personal interviews. While taking to you, your could-be employer is deciding whether your wares and abilities must be displayed in an orderly and reasonably connected manner. When you have carefully prepared a blueprint of your abilities and desires, you have something tangible to sell. Then you are ready to hunt for a job. Get all the possible information about your could-be job. Make inquiries as to the details regarding the job and the firm. Keep your eyes and ears open and use your own judgment. Spend a certain amount of time each day seeking the employment you wish for, and keep in mind, securing a job is your job now. Lesson 24, Vocabulary. Rival.
Prevent.
Initiative. Municipal, private, tram, consequence, detach, responsible, enrich, retire, occasion, dictate,
leisure,
influence, fortunate, enable, collectivism, municipality, manipulation, patriarchal, lockout.
Passage. In the last half of the 19th century, capital and labor were enlarging and perfecting their rival organizations on modern lines. Many an old firm was replaced by a limited liability company with a bureaucracy of salaried managers. The change met the technical requirements of the new age by engaging a large professional element and prevented the decline in efficiency that so commonly spoiled the fortunes of family firms in the second and third generation after the energetic founders. It was moreover a step away from individual initiative towards collectivism and municipal and state-owned business. The railway companies, though still private business managed for the benefit of shareholders, were very unlikely old family business. At the same time, the great municipalities went into business to supply lighting, trams, and other services to the taxpayers. The growth of the limited liability company and municipal business had important consequences. Such large and personal manipulation of capital and industry greatly increased the numbers and importance of shareholders as a class, an element in national life representing irresponsible wealth detached from the land and the duties of the landowners, and almost equally detached from the responsible management of business. All through the 19th century, America, Africa, India, Australia, and other parts of Europe were being developed by British capital, and British shareholders were thus enriched by the world's movement towards industrialization. To who, like Bournemouth and Eastbourne, sprang up to house large, comfortable classes who had retired on their incomes and who had no relation to the rest of the community except that of drawing dividends and occasionally attending a shareholders' meeting to dictate their orders to the management. On the other hand, shareholding meant leisure and freedom, which was used by many of the later Victorians for the highest purpose of a great civilization. The shareholders, as such, had no knowledge of the lives, thoughts, or needs of the workmen employed by the company in which he held shares, and his influence on the relations of capital and labor was not good. The paid manager acting for the company was in more direct relation with the men and their demands, but even he had seldom that familiar personal knowledge of the workmen which the employer had often had under the more patriarchal system of the old family business now passing away. Indeed, the mere size of operations and the number of workmen involved rendered such personal relations impossible. Fortunately, however, the increasing power and organization of the trade unions, at least in all skilled trades, enabled the workmen to meet on equal terms the managers of the companies who employed them. The cruel discipline of the strike and lockout taught the two parties to respect each other's strengths and understand the value of fair negotiation. Vocabulary. Elementary. Genius. Aspect. Geometry. Acute. Commission. Thorough. Proceed. Patent. Parallel. Approach. Originate. Cash. Multitude. Flock. Optimistic. Verbal. Visual. Assemble. Manipulate. Lever. Screw. Wedge. Alphabet. Interact. Characteristic. Competitive. Same. Premium. Spatial. Trigonometry. Inventiveness. Beneficence. Emulation. Passage.
What accounts for the great outburst of major inventions in early America breakthroughs such as the telegraph, the steamboat, and the weaving machine? Among the many shaping factors, I would single out the country's excellent elementary schools, a labor force that welcomed the new technology, the practice of giving premiums to inventors, and above all, the American genius for nonverbal spatial, thinking about things technological. Why mention the elementary schools? Because thanks to these schools, our early mechanics, especially in the New England and Middle Atlantic states, were generally literate and at home in arithmetic and in some aspects of geometry and trigonometry. Acute foreign observers related American adaptiveness and inventiveness to this educational advantage. As a member of a British commission visiting here in 1853 reported, with the mind prepared by thorough school discipline, the American boy develops rapidly into the skilled workman. A further stimulus to invention came from the premium system, which preceded our patent system and for years run parallel with it. This approach originated abroad, offered inventors medals, cash prizes, and other incentives. In the United States, multitudes of premiums for new devices were awarded at country fairs and at the industrial fairs in major cities. Americans flocked to these fairs to admire the new machines, and thus to renew their faith in the beneficence of the technological advance. Given this optimistic approach to technological innovation, the American worker took readily to that special kind of nonverbal thinking required in mechanical technology. As Eugene Ferguson has pointed out, a technologist thinks about objects that cannot be reduced to unambiguous verbal descriptions. They are dealt with in his mind by a visual, nonverbal process. The designer and the inventor are able to assemble and manipulate in their minds devices that as yet do not exist. This nonverbal spatial thinking can be just as creative as painting and writing. Robert Fulton once wrote, "The mechanic should sit down among levers, screws, wedges, wheels, etc., like a poet among the letters of the alphabet, considering them as an exhibition of his thoughts in which a new arrangement transmits a new idea. When all these shaping forces, schools, open attitudes, the premium system, a genius for spatial thinking, interacted with one another on the rich U.S. mainland, they produced the American characteristic emulation. Today, that word implies mere imitation, but in earlier times, it meant a friendly but competitive striving for fame and excellence." Lesson 25. Vocabulary. Rumor. Evolution. Confuse. Origin. Universe. Geology. Biology. Consistent. Unify. Account. Chapter. Appropriate. Criticism. Glove. Tactics. Christian. Behavior. Philosopher. Clarity. Specialist. Obtain. Notion. Argument. Debate. Creationism. Unenlightened. Citizenry. Cosmology. Creationist. Distortion.
Passage. Rumor has it that more than 20 books on creationism, evolution, are in the publisher's pipeline. A few have already appeared. The goal of all will be to try to explain to a confused and often unenlightened citizenry that there are not two equally valid scientific theories for the origin and evolution of universe and life. Cosmology, geology, and biology have provided a consistent, unified, and constantly improving account of what happened. Scientific creationism, which is being pushed by some for equal time in the classrooms wherever the scientific accounts of evolution are given, is based on religion, not science. Virtually all scientists and the majority of non-fundamentalists religious leaders have come to regard scientific creationism as bad science and bad religion. The first four chapters of Kitcher's book give a very brief introduction to evolution. At appropriate places, he introduces the criticism of the creationists and provides answers. In the last three chapters, he takes off his gloves and gives the creationists a good beating. He describes their programs and tactics, and for those unfamiliar with the ways of creationists, the extent of their deception and distortion may come as an unpleasant surprise. When their basic motivation is religious, one might have expected more Christian behavior. Kitcher is a philosopher, and this may account in some part for the clarity and effectiveness of his arguments. The non-specialist will be able to obtain at least a notion of the sorts of data and arguments that support evolutionary theory. The final chapters on the creationists will be extremely clear to all. On the dust jacket of this fine book, Stephen Jay Gould says, "This book stands for reason itself." And so it does. and all would be well were reason the only judge in the creationism-evolution debate. Vocabulary. Reasonable. Extent. Process. Theory. Alter. Conclusion. Establishment. Predict. Arise. Resource. Amount. Fund. Fur. Utility. Oppose. Straightforward. Project. Agency. Valid. Tend. Confuse. Capacity. Generate. Elegant. System. Principle. Aspect. Preconceptions. Praiseable. Passage.
The differences in relative growth of various areas of scientific research have several causes. Some of these causes are completely reasonable results of social needs. Others are reasonable consequences of particular advances in science, being to some extent self-accelerating. Some, however, are less reasonable processes of different growth in which preconceptions of the form scientific theory ought to take by persons in authority act to alter the growth pattern of different areas. This is a new problem, probably not yet unavoidable, but it is a frightening trend. This trend began during the Second World War, when several governments came to the conclusion that the specific demands that a government wants to make of its scientific establishment cannot generally be foreseen in detail. It can be predicted, however, that from time to time, questions will arise which will require specific scientific answers. It is therefore generally valuable to treat the scientific establishment as a resource or machine to be kept in functional order. This seems most effectively done by supporting a certain amount of research, not related to immediate goals, but of possible consequence in the future. This kind of support, like all government support, requires decisions about the appropriate recipient of the funds. Decisions based on utility as opposed to lack of utility are straightforward. But a decision among projects, none of which has immediate utility, is more difficult. The goal of the supporting agencies is the praiseable, one of the supporting good as opposed to bad science, but a valid determination is difficult to make. Generally, the idea of good science tends to become confused with the capacity of the field in question to generate an elegant theory. However, the world is so made that elegant systems are in principle unable to deal with some of the world's more fascinating and delightful aspects. New forms of thoughts, as well as new subjects for thought, must arise in the future, as they have in the past, giving rise to new standards of elegance.